Okay, so let's start. I'm going to present you a talk about the disparity between holes and electrons in iron nictides. And this work was done in close collaboration with Peter Hirschfeld and Alexander Kemper, who is now in Stanford. Also, James Fry, Haiping Cheng, and Tom Devereaux participated in this work. So the idea behind this work is that there is something intrinsically different between holes and electrons. Also, the sizes of the corresponding Fermi surface pockets quite similar. And I'm going to discuss how the orbital character of the bands affects the transport properties. Okay, so let me start first with the Hall coefficient data. Here's the experimental Hall coefficient versus doping for a different set of compounds. Here's 1 to 2. Electron dot with cobalt, you see it goes like this. Then there is a samarium 1111 compound, and it goes like this. But the other report says that for the same compound, it's more like this. And I'll discuss the difference between these two in terms of the impurity scattering, which may be that in one experiment it's more dirty than in another. And in phosphorus doped 1 to 2, it's again follows the same trend. Now, let me explain you what's so interesting about this particular behavior. And for that I'll use blackboard. Do everybody will see if I write down here? No?
You write far enough, yes.
just use the writing.
Maybe better.
Will you see?
Yeah. Use the far left panel and the far right and far right.
Okay.
Both off.
Okay. So the whole coefficient for the simple two-band model is proportional to the square of the conductivities. It's sigma electron square times Hall coefficient for electrons and sigma Hall square times H divided by the sum of the conductivities for holes and electrons. This is a two-band approximation for the Hall coefficient. And we know that Re or Rh is actually minus for electrons plus for holes, and is inversely proportional to the density of particular holes or electrons times the electric charge E. And the conductivity is proportional to the density of particles and lifetime divided by the mass. So, if you put everything in the Hall coefficient expression, what we have is this 1 over E times number of holes times tau Hall squared divided by the mass also squared minus number of electrons squared by ME squared. And there is a combination corresponding to the conductivities. ME tau E divided by ME. squared. So what will happen if the lifetimes which enter here, tau h and tau e, is the same, and also the masses for holes and electrons are the same? Then these terms cancel with what we have on the bottom, and our h goes to a simple expression which is depends only on the densities of holes and electrons. Squared. So now if I say that we dope the system with electrons, then N E is 1 plus x, or in case of the nucleotides, it's 6 plus x, and then for holes it's 6 minus x. And if I put everything here, I'll get a symbol.
6 there?
What's 6 there? 6 is a 6 electrons per side. Yes. And then we add x electrons. So what we have is proportion, I would say, proportion to minus x over e, which means that Hall coefficient will be negative, and it will be a decreasing function of x. So I draw and I put 0 here, it will go down. And that is exactly opposite to what is seen in experiment. So now if we suppose that the electrons have a much longer lifetime or much smaller mass, we can neglect the contribution from holes, and what we have for RH in this limit, it's actually proportional to the minus 1 over 1 plus x. So with increasing x, it will go more or less proportional to this. And this is the case when tau electrons much larger than tau holes. And that what is seen from the experiment, that
so the experiment is a Hall coefficient, yeah, strongly depend on temperature. So which temperature did you take?
It was taken at around 100 or 150 Kelvin to stay above the spin density wave transition temperature. Yes?
Am I understanding you correctly that you have number of electron being 6 plus x and number of hole being 6 minus x? Is that what you mean?
But it's probably means doping.
Yes, x is a doping.
So, but in the same formula, you have N, E, and N, H, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
N, H is the number of hole or not? I don't follow. Is that the number of electrons in the hole packet, or?
It's the number of carriers in the band.
Right, so why is it 6 minus X?
Because for a fully compensated case, what you have a N E equal to N H.
So if I take this x equal to 0 limit, which is parent compound, I assume?
Yes.
And you have 6 electrons and 6 holes in the system, is that right?
No, they're not electrons and holes, they're just electrons.
So what is N H? Is that H or K? It's hard to see.
H. Make it 1 and 2 H. Instead of the
yes.
H. I get 1 and 2.
Oh, okay.
Right, but if I can also ask, does it mean that essentially you assume that tau is totally independent on frequency? So over the whole electron band, tau is the same?
Here, yes.
So it's one number for the whole band?
Yes. In this simple expression, it's true, but generally it depends on the frequency.
Sure, I extracted from optics and yes. A huge frequency dependence.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I'm still a bit confused. If one starts with the picture that you do have electron in the whole packet, shouldn't you consider the number of carrier being the number of hole and number of electron covered by this packet? So how do you get six out of this? I don't see it. The number of electron and number of hole in the system is actually much smaller than one. You have part of the k-space being the whole packet, part of the k-space being the electron packet. And that volume should be the number of hole or electron per ion, right? How do you get six?
What about others?
He consider five bands.
Yeah.
So even if it's five bands, you have electron packet, the whole packet, right?
Well, they're small, but they're also bands. Mm-hmm. It's not related to the 26.
The
six electrons. Really, approximation is that tau is assumed to be a constant period, and this is approximation. Mm-hmm. Or the whole band?
No, but the whole packet contributes. Six. Okay, six. Yeah. This whole is only for the band, which means that only the packet matters. Just don't know that doesn't matter, right?
Okay. This exact number, actually you can put it to be one or zero. The result in proportionality will still be x. That's the main message.
Why don't you go ahead? We only have 2 minutes.
Okay, sorry. The another interesting application of the formalism, which involves different lifelines for holes and electrons, is the resistivity. Experimentally, it looks quite non-Fermi liquid, but actually, in the paper by Golubov and Oleg Dolgov, they managed to feed this data assuming just two different relaxation times for holes and for electrons. So they are able to fit this strange behavior. Okay, let me switch now to what we've done to understand this. So, we wanted to calculate the lifetime, and the lifetime can be found from the simple second order diagram for the self energy, which is this diagram. Here, wavy line is the interaction, which I'll put U for now. This green function, and this bubble we approximate as a spin susceptibility. So what we are doing, we are looking for the effect of the scattering on the spin fluctuations on the lifetime. So this.
Why not a diagram with one wavy line? Just wavy line. Why you need to?
Because there is no spin fluctuations.
It is.
If you renormalize the interaction, so you can draw it like this.
Right, but I guess I'm asking why you keep only one bubble? Why not to keep infinite series of bubbles and call it fully renormalized spin susceptibility?
Actually, what we do, we instead of simple bubble, we put in the RP renormalized spin susceptibility.
But then it's the same.
Okay, so if you draw in this way, it's chi-naught. It's bare spin susceptibility. Then you can replace it with a full chi RP. And that's what we calculate, actually.
U is a constant.
U is a Hubbard-like interaction. And so from this diagram, imaginary part of sigma of k and omega will be proportional to the sum over frequencies, and after we do the frequency summation, we will have prefactor U square, because it's second order diagrams, and we have imaginary part of spin susceptibility, and there will be theta functions which cut the frequency integration of some k minus omega. Okay, so here's one important effect of the orbital character. Actually, the green function is diagonal only in the band representation. In the orbital representation, it will be proportional to the band green function, which includes energy dispersion, and there will be factors which converts from the band representation to the orbital. So if orbital indices are n and n prime, then there will be a n, say, band lambda, and it will be q dependent and n prime lambda of q. And there will be a sum over lambda. So what happens is that this factors AQ, they're momentum dependent. And as soon as we put here they will effectively provide a momentum dependence of the self energy. In the sense that imaginary part of sigma n and prime of k omega will be proportional to the summation over all indices, then there will be interaction lines which includes Hubbard U, then Hund's exchange, then the pair, then also U prime, which is the interorbital Hund's exchange, interorbital Coulomb interaction, and other indices there will be N prime. And there will be this matrix elements dependent on Q. I'm not going to do this. I'm just going to say that effectively you can think about this object U times AQ as a momentum dependent interaction. The orbital matrix elements maximal for the same orbital. So what you do, you scatter to the same orbital more than to all other orbitals.
But isn't the interaction between, in a band language, isn't the interaction between electrons and holes? Because I presume that your pi is peaked at zero pi or pi zero, right?
It is peaked there, but as soon as you change doping, you go away from the nesting, so it will have some broad structures.
So you include all terms, electron, electron, all together?
Yes. So, okay, let me show you what we found. We found that, for example, here's a case where the doping is close to the to zero, it's slightly electron doped. We choose U to be equal to 1 eV and J equal to 0.25. And this is the intensity of the imaginary part of the self energy taken at 20 milliEV. So we see that there are some particular parts of the Fermi surface where imaginary part of sigma is small. Its amplitude is much smaller than here and on the electron pocket. And that's directly connected to the matrix elements, because this small patches of the Fermi surface is actually composed of the dxy orbital. And dxy orbital, because of the matrix elements, can scatter only to the dxy, can mostly scatter to the dxy. And there is no much phase space to scatter, that's why they behave more like free electrons here. And as, for example, if we increase doping, this patches becomes larger. but essentially the result is the same. If we decrease the doping, what we have a new Fermi surface contour, gamma, which also has DXY's character. And then there is a possibility to scatter of this electron here, and that's why we see that the scattering on these small patches becomes much bigger than it was for electron doped materials. Also, I'd like to mention that this object behaves completely as a Fermi liquid. It depends on the omega, the omega square.
If you take these Fermi surfaces and average imaginary part of sigma over Fermi surface, mm-hmm. do you see a big difference in numbers between hole and electrons?
Not very big.
Because you started by saying that one of two taus should be much larger than the other. It's averaged over Fermi surface.
That, here's another point. This is the approximate formula, which doesn't include Fermi velocities and the effective mass. Mm-hmm. When we calculate the conductivity or the Hall coefficient, we have to include all these factors. And it appears that the Fermi velocity is maximal here. So these small patches actually give the greater contribution than all other points on the Fermi surface because of the Fermi velocity. So that is why what we see for the conductivity is that it's more or less small for the Hall doped, and as soon as we electron dope, it starts to grow quite rapidly. That's for electrons, and for the holes, it's more or less constant, and then start to decrease for the overdoped region. And the same is true for the Hall coefficient, where we include the effective mass. So here the Hall coefficient is positive for Hall doping, and then if we take, for example, a case of J equal to zero, the Hall coefficient goes down with the doping. So it's similar to what comes out from the simplest expression. As soon as we add the Hund's exchange, phi naught J, it subtracts from the interorbital Coulomb interactions because of the spin rotational invariance. It's like U prime minus 2J. So it's, and then the processes which are due to the intraorbital Coulomb interaction becomes dominant. And what we see here, we see that the slope changes towards what is seen in the experiment. So, in other words, when we include J, we actually enhance the anisotropy of the scattering rate. Okay, so.
Excuse me,
time's
pretty much up.
Yeah, I'll discuss that. So, basically, what we see that the orbital contributions to the Fermi surface is very important for the inelastic processes, and we see that we can at least qualitatively explain what is the behavior of the Hall coefficient in nictites. That's due to the several effects like anisotropy of the effective lifetime of the Fermi velocity and the effective mass. All this comes together and gives the result. Thank you.
I think your point number one, down below, well, under several factors, that must be, that has to be interpreted. First of all, I think you mean smaller scattering rate, right?
Yes.
And secondly, you're not talking about the average, because Andre asked about the average.
The averages are
roughly
pretty close.
Something,
yes.
One particle scattering. Mm-hmm. So this is a reference to these TXY states.
Yes.
Okay.
So I studied a very similar calculation, and I published in Coulomb. So using the fluctuation extended approximation, you study the RPA.
Yes.
So I'm curious. So in my calculation, the cold structure, when that without electron phone interaction, only a Coulomb interaction, that cold spot hot spot structure is very weak in my calculation. So I don't know
which structure. Sorry.
Hot spot, cold spot structure, momentum dependence of damping. You show that momentum dependence of damping is very large in your calculation. So it might be so in cuprates, in the case of cuprates, so many studies have done such a damping has been calculated, and the self constancy usually reduces the momentum dependence of reactions in time. So, and my comment is that at around 150 Kelvin. So, in my calculation, flex approximation, so reaction time is rather smear. So, I don't know which one is more realistic one.
And here that's due to the self-consistency, the self-energy effects and the propagators that smear out the momentum space now.
Yeah. I guess without digesting, you don't know. You just do calculations and get the results.
That's true.
So I want to know that more the parameter, temperature parameter in physics in detail. You are used to calculate parameter for such a temperature?
Yes, what I've shown, the anisotropy is at a particular frequency which corresponds to 70 Kelvin.
I want to know the temperature in your calculation.
We evaluated the diagram at zero temperature.
Zero temperature?
Yes.
And then, is there a question?
Go ahead, please.
So can you go back to the sign you calculated? Because we just measured all the data in the Hodel sign, the whole coefficient. So this calculation is done for temperature above SDWs or below.
Supposing that in our calculations we don't have SDW state. Okay. Yes, so it's above.
Okay, so your conclusion in the Hodel sign is rather flat or. There's a weak doping dependence, that's your conclusion?
It's again the parameters, and parameters depend on a particular substance. Okay. So for one of the substance, we may have a slowly increasing. For another one, we have more or less constant.
Is that quite difficult to calculate in the SDW state? Because we find that that region is more complex and
it's much more interesting
information.
Yes. It's just a little harder.
Yeah, we can.
And
we
then
can
the financial reasons for it.
A lot of data.
May I ask a question? Going back to anisotropy in your calculation, anisotropy of 1/tau in your calculation. Mm-hmm. Is it possible to say what's the primary source of this anisotropy? Is it interaction between two electron pockets that is important?
Yeah, it's the source is of course the fact that the spin susceptibility is picked at pi zero.
So it's interaction between electrons and holes. And then I don't see why the same interaction gives one lifetime for electron and another for holes, because it's apparently the same interaction process.
But he has a different orbital component. Yeah. You're saying that the orbital makes it different.
Orbital
which translates into angular dependence of the same interaction.
Right. So the yellow part has less scattering, right? And this just this XY part, which is not reflected on the electron pocket when you scatter by zero. So they don't participate in the spin wave scattering.
So in simple words, electron from here can't scatter here because it's a different orbital.
And per hole.
Yes.
Green can scatter
only. And this blue can scatter only to the blue. But this green can scatter to this green. And this red scatters to this red.
Mm-hmm.
And since the susceptibility is has some broad structure around pi zero, we have a more or less uniform scattering on the whole pocket.
Right, but blue on electron sheet can scale on blue on another electron sheet.
Yes, it scatters here, but the phase space is small for the scattering.
This was asked first, and he said that it's pretty flat. This was the question. You said, answering to first question, that susceptibility when you do becomes rather flat, or maybe I misunderstood you.
No,
it's just still peaked, it's still highly peaked,
but theory. It's a broad structure. Okay. It's not the delta function like you.
No. So basically, it's also, would it correct to say that this anisotropy results from the fact that you take around a small j? Imagine that I would take a large j, and then I would allow also strong interorbital scattering, and this would reduce anisotropy. Would it be right to say this?
If you preserve a spin rotational invariance, which says that u prime is equal to u minus j, if you increase j, you effectively decrease the interorbital interaction, so you increase the anisotropy.
Let's just follow quickly. So that's why the result you show in the end had a tendency to go down near the zero, right?
Mm-hmm.
And actually, if I extrapolate your result by going to a larger j, it looks even more like experiments, all right?
That would be great, but if you calculate the susceptibility, it starts to diverge for a larger j, because it's on the border of the spin instability.
You have to avoid instability as much as you can.
Yes.
Which makes your parameter really unrealistic. Right? The realistic 100 j is much more than 0.2, much more.
These are effective parameters, I guess.
Yeah. So, that's my conclusion.